Jake is up asking, answering a couple of questions, if you would like to ask any.
Sorry, I was just wondering if you would mind repeating John Crook's quote about narrative and self,
sure.
I think it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was rather quick. In meditation, the narrative of self floats free in a space like open awareness, wherein judgment or analysis no longer apply, because these are both attributes solely of the narrative and not of its basis. That was a nice, easy question.
Yeah, thanks for that. You said a lot of interesting things. My question is not about really your view. It's about a view that you summarized from John Crook, which seemed to be a very grand narrative about the development of contemporary culture. And there seemed to be some equation made between nihilism and materialism, which I'm not convinced by. I mean, just to give you the example of America, which you talked about quite a bit, as I understand it, that is a very religiously oriented culture. There's a lot of Christians there, yeah. But there's also an awful lot of materialism. So yeah. It doesn't seem to me to be a simple equation.
Yeah, yeah. I think it might be that one way of looking at this is to say that if one's mind orientation is nihilistic, then materialism is one of the ways of trying to fill that space. I think that's the argument he's making. But yes, you're right. I mean, materialism... I was actually, as I was writing this myself, I also thought the same thing, actually. Materialism has got a kind of power of its own. It's very, very attractive, and so it can be adapted, I suppose, to different situations. I think that's partly correct. But he's trying to get at I think his other argument is that humanism, which was really used to, if you like, debunk... a humanistic perspective to debunk the gods has not been applied as rigorously to looking at debunking nihilism. So that's another part of his argument. But I do take your point. I think you've made a valid point.
I suppose one thing I've been sort of reflecting on is that since the collapse of the Ashoka Empire until perhaps the arising of the Sarvodaya movement, there seems to be an utter silence within the Buddhist Sangha and society on social policy. And it feels to some extent that the Sangha has allowed or has been complicit, and particularly more recently, in this exposure of the communities that it exists within to globalization. And it's tended not to challenge that. I'm prepared to be contradicted in that or enlightened in that, but there does seem to be an overemphasis on individual practice and not the expression of the Dharma within society and the establishment of policy.
Well, yes, I mean, I'm not going to answer that because the other speakers are. I mean, I think that this is a fundamental point, and I know it's a theme that some of the other speakers will be able to speak to much better than I can, but that's quite right. I mean, this is one of the issues about updating or finding a way of relating Buddhism to our culture when we have actually very well-developed institutions, and those institutions have enormously good effects and also very damaging effects, potentially. But in the day of the Buddha, as they're saying, you know, you look at the size of the population, the structure of the societies, it was probably less complex in terms of, although there probably were institutions, but the soteriological, if you like, the wish for people to seek enlightenment in a world view within which part of the aim was to escape this saha world and achieve nirvana, and that way of thinking is very sort of is not one that's particularly that we're looking to import into the West. So yeah, I mean, I've sort of glossed over one or two things there, but yeah.
One more.
Oh, hello. I haven't quite thought of the question yet, but something to do with education, because that was what came out of John's book at the end, really, was this emphasis on some form of new education, particularly for young people.
Yeah.
And lots of people have thought on those same lines. You know, Krishnamurti started a school. Thich Nhat Hanh is always surrounded by young people. I'm just struggling with how we could actually work towards doing something about that.
Yes. Well, I'm not an educationalist, but we already have very well established educational institutions. So there'd be one issue would be how is it possible to influence those? I suppose, but it's not again something that I'm particularly. I mean, the other thing that struck me about education is because some of John's ideas are pretty exciting if you want an adventurous life, but actually there are just some very basic issues like as I said, education of girls and women in sub-Saharan Africa is a massive issue, and that's ordinary. Any kind of education would be great. From where the situation is at the moment. So there are a number of facts. But again, I suspect other speakers are going to talk more about this.
Okay, thank you, Jake. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Excuse me. We'll now break for coffee. And I don't know whether my voice will last even that. I would just like to remind you that there's a bookstall at the back there being run by Clive, which you can buy various books, including World Crisis by John Crook. And remember, no Widdershins coffee, please, clockwise. Okay, please be back here in time for 11:30. If you happen to be still clutching a mug, please just recycle it for the next coffee. Okay, thank you.